I'm Brandon.
And I'm Brandon.
And welcome back to Apollo City Comics, your anything and everything comic book podcast. I said that. What kind of Boston accent did I just like pick up? Welcome back to the podcast.
Out your pad, reading some comics.
That was terrible. Hello, everybody. We're back yet again with another fucking interview. I know we're going to talk about comics and go over stuff. And one day we're getting to it. But there's just so many people putting out badass shit that we just need to talk about and promote and hang out with. And speaking of hanging out and promoting and, freaking supporting a little bit, we just launched our very own Patreon, where we have various tiers. You could be an underground member that you just, you know, is Apollo City Comics worth $1 a month to you? Is it worth the price of a comic book a month to you? And we have various other tiers where you'll get the comics that we've been making in the background the past year or so. You'll see them first before anyone else. And another tier where you could hire one of us to edit your book and work on your project with you. So check it out. There's, you know, it's friendly enough for the whole family to pitch in, you know, a couple cents to build up that dollar regime. And we've been pumping out so much content and just trying to do so much for the indie community. We want to put some of that towards Kickstarters. We want to help support people with some of those funds. So, you know, check it out. And, you know, you get to help pick episode topics and all sorts of stuff. There's a Discord channel. All sorts of crap. We're doing more work for you guys just to like kind of feed me a penny, please. But as we ask for money for the Patreon, you know, we're going to be asking for a little bit more for this upcoming punk rock anthology that comes out or the Kickstarter begins April 25th. So keep an eye out. Again, various tiers from patches to stickers to maybe even a theme song tossed in, a 60-page book. And it's going to be a thick boy. I was just talking to the printing company today about some stuff, Comics Wellspring, and we have a lot in the background as well for them. So keep an eye out for announcements with the anthology and get ready. April 25th is our launch. So a lot going on, and that's all kind of been really insane, to be honest. That's like a lot of adage that we just put in front of everything, more than usual. Two extra ads just to promote ourselves. It's kind of weird. Mm-hmm. But man, all that energy, you just need that cup of coffee that you probably got from Coffee and a Comic over at coffeeandacomic.com, where you get your books bagged and boarded and sent to you with coffee, so you don't waste your energy bagging and boarding books. You just dive right into your comics because they're bagged and boarded. What else do I need to say to promote them? Check it out. Pull list is different. It's updated. It's a lot easier. It took me a minute because I'm an old guy that doesn't know how to like adjust to things like that. But literally on Previews World, you grab all your variants and all that, stick it in there, and then Frank will distribute them out, and you get your books bagged and boarded with coffee. So check out coffeeandcomic.com with our 15% out discount. We should start getting paid for this, man. I'm just like winging all these ads.
Just
like,
start hitting them up.
But anyways, to promote, as we always do, we have two very lovely gentlemen, actually. I'm pretty hyped. You guys are good looking as hell. Daryl and Becker from Dollars and Donuts. Hello, gentlemen.
Welcome. Hey guys.
Hello, Brandons.
Greetings, Brandon.
I know, right? It's always like some sort of joke around that.
I love it. It's
yeah, every time.
Becker, I've known you like just kind of over Instagram. Like we've just been kind of like, we just like send each other a nice little laugh or like a heart thing every so while, and we'll like each other's posts.
It's been like 3 years now.
Yeah, it's been like 3 years. We've talked like once in these three years. Like.
Yeah, dude.
Well, when you think about it, the first episode I ever did was in April of 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And Becker was the first person that was like sharing it around when Brandon asked me to get kind of like show everybody like the episode that we did together. And Becker was the one that was like, "Oh, I'll go share it." And then it just kind of went from there, really.
Yeah. Yeah. So we've been just kind of like touching each other virtually for a bit. And Daryl, dude, good to meet you. You guys together.
Nice to meet you guys.
Oh, tell me about Dollars and Donuts. Like, where did it start? Who started it? Tell me like a brief, or I know you guys have said it 1,000 times, so we don't need to hear like the overly done, but tell me your roles in
it. Dollars and Donuts Productions was started out as my childhood comic company. So that's kind of where all of the comic stuff still comes back in, where I draw comic strips of like the family dog and making fun of the family, stuff like that. And when I got into high school, I wanted to be an animator, but I realized just the drawing 24 frames a second was just, I was too lazy for that. So I was like, but I do have a bunch of stupid friends. I could film them doing stuff. So we started making movies in 2003, and the name kind of carried over. So we stayed as Dollars and Donuts Productions. And so now we've been doing movies for 20 years now, making short films and premiering them every year in San Francisco and getting into a lot of festivals. And Becker was one of the first guys that was in the crew, and it's stayed the course over the years. We had a lot of people come and go. But so now we're pulling it all full circle and making comic books again based around our films.
That's so interesting.
How did you and Becker actually meet?
I think it was in math class. That was when Becker was his best Jack Black impression every day. Like that was who you were trying to be in life.
Oh shit! That was in geometry class.
Geometry, yes.
It was geometry class. Yeah. I failed that class.
Yeah. I did too. Probably your fault. I'm sure. I'll blame you for that.
Oh, it was definitely my fault.
Yeah.
Like reciprocal? What is that?
Someone give me a reciprocal.
One of the first times I think we hung out was at the one of the proms. I think was that the one you went as the Joker?
Yeah, that was my senior prom.
Maybe that wasn't the one. I remember there's two other comic connections with our proms, because like we hung out and one of them you were the Joker and the other one you told me I looked like Bruce Wayne, and that was one of the best compliments I'd ever received up to that point.
It could have been that. I think it was the junior prom where I had the orange suit.
Yeah.
The orange. Yeah, did you do the Dumb and Dumber suit?
You could like flash that up in post.
Yeah, yeah. If you send that to me, yeah, I would totally toss that up like right here.
He went to the prom like in full Joker makeup.
That's my senior wear.
That's amazing. That's cool.
That's incredible.
Yeah. But the cool part about that one is like I actually got to buzz my principal at that time. With a hand buzzer?
Oh my god.
And he was like, oh, look good. And I was like, oh, okay, good to see you too.
That's amazing.
Pull the fucking riser.
That's incredible. I like how he casually just said, oh yeah, that was the prom you dressed as the Joker. And he's like, oh yeah, I did.
Oh, as a matter of fact, I did do that. Yeah.
He's like, it wasn't Halloween. It was definitely prom.
Oh, yeah, it was a lot of, Becker got a lot of zany costume adventures here.
So like your first like attempts to make comics, tell me about that. Like I mean comics are hard to make, as we're all kind of finding out trying to make comics. So, and you know, this is what 20 years ago. So it's a different universe on networking and stuff like that. What like roadblocks do you run into? What strayed you away from it?
So when I was a kid, I would just be frustrated with why doesn't it look good? Mm-hmm. Why doesn't it look good? Like draw a pencil and then not understand that somebody needs to ink it and color it and print it. And I was like, why doesn't it just look like products? I was always obsessed with things and products and product design. And like, I wanted to make toys. I wanted to make stuff. And I was like, everything looks like shit. I was just always mad and disappointed as a kid.
Yeah.
So that kind of like got me to give it up at that point. And our first like printed comic that we had done was in 2017. We had a premiere in San Francisco, and we wanted to have like a giveaway, just like some sort of program. And that was just, like the wheels started turning again of like, you know, why don't we do a comic that ties into the films we're showing tonight instead of just having a boring flyer to print out.
There you go.
So that we were premiering in December and we started putting it together very late. So I was always a little disappointed in that, because it wasn't like a full comic. It was like there was a couple pages per short. We think we premiered like four shorts that year, and there was a couple pages of story per short, and then the rest was sort of filled in with like the team bios and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. So it's always like I felt cheap selling that, where I was like, is this worth it? It's like barely qualifies as a comic.
It's kind of like an ash can at that point, you know what I mean? Like a real quick promotional piece. Yeah.
Yeah, so we gave that out that night to everybody in the audience, but we still had a bunch of extras. So we started selling it on our website, and like I would always feel like kind of like, like it was meant to be this one night thing, and like I want to make this a real deal comic with real stories, and like make it worthwhile, give it some actual value. So that's where we're finally at now.
Mm-hmm. That's too cool. So I mean, and I was looking at your filmography that you guys have had. There's some just so many good things. I've seen a few of them for sure. Back when Becker and I were first introduced, like I watched like everything you guys had out at that point. And it's the Dick Detective ones are like some of my favorites. Those are just yeah.
Thank you.
Those so what gets you in the mindset? What changes from like screenwriting to writing comics that you guys, because you did a lot of, looks like you did some lettering on it, Daryl. Looks like you did some a little bit of editing. Yeah. Looks like you wrote some stuff. Like what, how many skill sets, one, did you try to pick up? Because I know it's a lot to carry at once. But where does this blend into your other filmography too?
So I've always sort of dabbled in writing. I never really liked it just because it's hard. The blank page is really daunting and hard. So like I prefer editing footage and editing other people's scripts. So like if I get a script, mm-hmm. I feel like I can rewrite it better than I can write from scratch.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I've always had somewhat of a drawing ability, so it felt natural. I wanted, if this was going to be our first real deal printed comic, I definitely wanted to get some art in there to fulfill those childhood dreams. So I illustrated a couple of the stories. And the lettering came from just being interested in graphic design and that kind of stuff. So like learning that was, I've been doing an Illustrator. So
cool.
Just finding the right fonts and like kind of learning the rules. There was a great webpage on like Blambot fonts or something. I don't know if you guys look, but there's one of the comic font companies has a really nice guideline of like, here's when you use italics size bold, here's when you use exclamation points, and it was like, oh, if you like, you can learn those rules, at least follow them a little bit, then you can break them. And
that's cool. I'll drop a link to that below. I would love to check that out myself. Lettering is something I've always been like super curious. Brandon's actually working on some lettering right now too, so that's super dope.
It's lettering is quite the pain in the ass if you don't know what you're doing, like myself. It's just like, we're going to figure this out. I bought a stylus for my tablet, and I was just like, oh my God, you have to resize it, find the right font, create your own font.
Yeah.
It's fucking killer. Like, well, it's definitely a skill set itself.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, it really directs the whole personality of like the book, you know, like working with the art and everything. But what I kind of liked about doing the lettering myself was it started to give me a chance to rewrite stuff. So like as the art came in and I would see like, oh shit, I wrote a whole paragraph and there's like an inch to say like, this needs to be rewritten to fit. Mm-hmm. But like being the same person kind of just speeds that process up a little bit. Mm-hmm. Has been helpful.
That's awesome. And it seems like film wise, I don't know, I kind of like, and I don't, you know, maybe if you're not a fan of this person, it might be like not that cool. But to me, it's like a very Kevin Smith way of like just going about and creating stuff, you know, like it sounds like, okay, I was trying to make comics. This did not fruition the way I wanted. So I'm just going to because I've translated stuff that was supposed to be on screen into comics. And that was like a big direction I kind of took for a bit. So like seeing you guys just pick up the camcorder and just make your own shit, like, that's one, it's a ballsy thing, you know what I mean? Because it stops so many people from just picking it up and just trying it out. I feel like nowadays with, you know, TikTok and stuff, it's a lot more short form, but making a short film, I did one a few years ago, and even doing a 5-minute short film takes a lot of takes and a lot of work and all that.
Yeah, like, it's the, like, completing it is always like the tough part, like getting it all the way through all the various steps.
Yeah, like what has kept you going the last 20 years? What's kept you going this whole like time, like doing it? What's kept ideas fresh and, you know, stories continuous?
Well, I don't know, Becker, you want to jump in for like the parties at the end of the year? Like, was definitely like a big. Like,
oh yeah.
Once we started doing that, it was like now we had like a reason to get it done by the end of the year, which pushed new ideas, which. And forced us to make some things. Like even last year, we only had 3 films ready, and then like 2 weeks before the premiere, we're like, "Well, we need more content. Like we're not even going to fill the hour. We got to like do another short film." And then we did one, and that one's actually won some awards so far.
Yeah,
so
wow. That's the asshole one with the one with Sean. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, so that one got some awards. We finished that one in one day. We had 6 hours to film all the stuff inside of a mortuary. And then we had to get out of there in time to get the golden hour on a Pacifica beach. And then turns out like the film ended up just being black and white anyway. So like it was, didn't really matter, but like yeah, it all worked. Yeah. And we were all just pretty, as a group effort, we're just like, oh shit, man, we can do this shit in one day now, you know?
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. And that was our fastest we were done. Cause we had that, we were like, can we make a short and like not even just make it in 2 weeks, but it needed to be on screen in 2 weeks. So it needed to like be mixed. It needed to like, we had to make a DCP that the theater was able to play. Like we had to ship it to the theater's home companies so we could test it. Like there was like all these last minute hurdles that we like had to hit benchmarks for. So I was pretty proud that we were able to pull it off.
Mm-hmm. And now we have all these contacts all over the place now too. One of our friends now works at Alamo Draft House, and we can probably get a premiere there pretty easy now.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Especially one of the smaller ones too. Like, yeah, we could, like she said, like we could, like if it was based on like the premiere like 2 years ago, we could have like filled up like the main screen, like theater number one.
We had looked into it like before, but it was always prohibitively expensive. Like they wanted a lot up front. But now, yeah.
Who knows now?
Make some friends. And...
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. When it comes to like working in comics versus film, I know like they're completely different mediums. When it comes to networking, do you feel like they're equally as difficult, or when it comes to trying to find people to work on film, it might be easier, or vice versa? Is it easier to find people in comics? What do you find is like probably more frustrating?
Right now, it feels like selling the comic is more frustrating. Like, I don't know if you guys have found that yet. You guys.
We're like on the horizon of about to face that hurdle.
We're building to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you guys have like kind of a more of a built-in genre or audience, it feels, to like to pull from, which hopefully will be successful with that. Because like ours, it feels like right now that we're so niche that you almost have to know us to like it until it comes out. And then hopefully people will see that there's something there. Like it's been a hard sell. To say like, oh, it's an anthology comic and there's crime stories and there's westerns and there's this and there's that. The comic stores I've been to try to pitch carrying it and stuff, they've all like been very nice and they like it, but they have all said like, oh, well, it's not Batman or it's not Spider-Man. It's like, it's hard to like get that in front of people.
Mm-hmm.
As far as working on them, everybody always wants to help, it seems. Like that still has that like little glitz and glamour from Hollywood sprinkled on it. Like that still lasts where people are like, oh, movies, like there's something special about it. Like,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Where comics, it's a little bit of a harder sell. Like people like the pictures, but I don't think people like to read.
I can see that.
Maybe this might put us.
That's literally me right there.
it's one of those things, especially like indie comics. It's so much smaller than you realize, because I was breaking this down recently. Like if you go from, you know, the top of the food chain to the bottom, it's like the big two, you have DC and Marvel. And then you kind of have what's mainstream indie, which is like Image and Oni Press and like Dark Horse and all those type of brands.
Boom
and
Studios.
Boom and all that type of stuff. And then below that, you have like the indie, which is like kind of like lesser known comics, Dollars and Donuts, stuff like that. And then you have like the underground, which is just like the zine network and, you know, that kind of level.
And
we're only at the fucking second bottom of the food chain right now at this point. And finding, you know, even like, you know, explaining this about like views and stuff like on the YouTube channel, like I look at every like little small boost as a reward, because our show is so niche. We're only promoting indie creators. We don't have any Tom Kings, not Scott Snyders or any of that on the show. So like not everyone's Googling, you know, indie interviews and whatnot. But I feel like if you like indie comics, it shows that you just really fucking like comics though. Like if you're going to get that, it's because you're like, fuck, that seems like a comic I haven't checked out and I haven't read. And your audience is a bit more genuine than the DC, Marvel, top of the food chain people, you know? So
yeah, or maybe they're buying it based on the brand recognition or just tradition at this point. Like, I mean, I know I did for years where I just bought Spider-Man just because that's what you did on Wednesday.
Yeah, and like, I just buy Batman, you know, just fucking, you're yeah. fucking just, yeah. yeah. Every time I'm like, I'm going to stop and I'm like, oh, but Chip Zdarsky's writing it. I guess I'll write yeah. it out a little bit longer, you know, like,
yeah. Like, but he looks so fucking cool on the cover.
Like, yeah. yeah. Like, am I going to miss out on something cool this month, you know, in the 70, yeah. 80 years? It's, I don't know. They're kind of more the comfort comic, you know, like the dependable one. It'll always be there. But indie stuff is just so exclusive and just so like it just captures people a bit different. And not yeah. even if like it doesn't come out like as amazing as you want it, the execution and the fact that you put it out, that just gets support right off the bat. Yeah. And you guys went with Indiegogo. Have you guys always, I feel like you guys have always gone to Indiegogo though, right?
No, like, this is our first time.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
We've really done three Kickstarters before. My first Kickstarter I did for a comic book in 2011, and that it failed. And like it kind of just was like my first kind of toe in the water of this kind of thing. And I was like really, you know, disappointed that that didn't work, but I didn't know what I was doing with marketing it and like reaching out to people. And then we've done two other film Kickstarters, which were really successful and we're really happy with. I don't really know why I went with Indiegogo this time, just to try something different. Like, mm-hmm. it looks like some of the features were cool, but I think sort of pretty similar now.
Yeah. Anyway. I'm always curious. I'm always mm-hmm. curious about why people choose one over the other. Cause it's always like kind of a learning experience. And there's so many more yeah. kickstarting platforms now, like Zoop and some comic book based ones. Like it's kind of interesting seeing like which direction you'll go at that point.
Yeah. Yeah, it always like previously like the flexible funding thing seemed to be Indiegogo exclusive, but I'm actually not sure. I think Kickstarter mm-hmm. can do that now too, right?
Yeah, I think it just varies at that point too. We're barely about to launch ours of that, so we've just set up tiers. So we'll see how some of that kind of plays out too.
What I've seen in from the past is like, you know, you choose a tier you're trying to like back. And then it gives you the option to add like a tip kind of thing where you could fund more. Yeah.
Mm.
But that like that's the most I've seen as far as like customizable amount you could fund.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So $69
every time he backs it.
That's right.
Just the credit card bill just filled with 69s. Like,
before you were saying how like you know you wanted to start with comics and then you found it easier to like film stuff. When it came to a lot of like, you know, stories you're trying to tell, do you feel like there's some for Dollars and Donuts that can only be expressed in a comic book form? Or do you feel like that there's some that are can only be expressed in a film? Because they are like tie-ins that kind of add yeah. more of like backstory and kind of history to your films and kind of just more content. But did you ever find yourself feeling like, man, like this would be better as like an exclusive book or, you know?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, the main inspiration for these. It's kind of like I always really liked the licensed comics from like the 60s and or like the Walt Disney, like even the name Dollars and Donuts Showcase is what we're calling it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's mm-hmm. from Walt Disney Showcase. And that was one of the offshoots of like Walt Disney comics and stories in the 60s where they just have like various, you know, Donald Duck and Jiminy Cricket and stuff. And I always really enjoyed those where they would do like the further adventures of somebody from TV or movies or something.
Mm-hmm.
And the, like the story, like for example, one of our stories really can only be in a comic book. So in 2012, we made a movie called Old Timers. And that was
mm-hmm.
with my grandpa, 85 at the time, we made him into an action movie star. And that was kind of like, just, it was a fun bonding experience with like the generations. We used him and my uncle and our neighbor across the street as like, these old guys fighting back in their neighborhood against some drug dealers.
Mm-hmm. And I
just had fun having like the old guys swear and shoot guns and stuff. Just like had a good time. But since then he's passed away. So we always had this idea of like where a sequel might happen, but it was so hard to get them to shoot the first one. And it just felt like this lightning in a bottle thing where it's like, we had a fun weekend with my grandpa. We're never going to do that again.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Wouldn't it be cool to see those characters do this? So now it's like, it almost has this double feeling. I wrote this story of like, not only am I getting to see this character again, but I get to take my grandpa on another adventure again and like kind of give him a different ending that is maybe more cinematic or heroic than like what real life kind of gives you. You know? It's like the sadder, longer hospital death that awaits us in reality instead of the cool, you know, explosive ending that you might get in an action movie.
There you go. That's so cool. That's really cool that you get to do that and kind of continue that off. That's actually
and that's really something that you can only do with comic books. So it's like that it has to exist in this form. And it's been really fun seeing the interpretations of my grandpa and these characters and these settings that we're having. An artist, I don't exactly know how to pronounce his name. I think it's Samir Samal. So hopefully I pronounced it right because he's been so great. And he's very friendly and been really cool working with him, but he's in Brazil and sending him stuff from South San Francisco, and he's like drawing the donut shop down the street, and it's like just so cool to make it like this global thing, like bringing our little city and our friends and family to the world with that.
Damn, that's awesome. That's such a, again,
no, that's awesome
through comics.
Yeah, we do rep that South City.
Hey, but you know, it's pretty amazing, like, how comics can do that, because, you know, the unfortunate passing of a loved one, it's one of those things, like you said, you caught lightning in a bottle, you got to have your grandpa in a film, and got to have that experience with him, but you kind of immortalize this legacy of his, and kind of, like, his persona, and just kind of, like, his influence through those stories at this point in the comics, where he may be gone, but, you know, he's still with you in your creations, and still with you in, like, whatever stories you tell within that world.
Oh yeah, definitely. And I just like have this feeling of like always being so in love with cartoons and just now I'm turning everyone I know into them. I'm like, I have this like fantasy as a kid of wanting to go to like the real Toontown and hang out with Roger Rabbit.
Yeah, there
like,
you go.
Well, now I'm just like making all my friends into cartoons and then I don't ever have to talk to them again. I'll just read the comic.
Oh yeah. So
not to always do what I say.
Could we expect could we expect more of this from you guys at this point? Like are you guys like finally like breaking into the comic book medium and making this part of Dollars and Donuts to continue and push forward?
Yeah, I'd hope so. I would love for it to be a continuing thing. It's so damn expensive that like I don't know how realistic it would be to really like we definitely can't do it like a monthly thing, like a real like comic company could, but I could see it being like a quarterly or a yearly thing. Right now we have 6 issues planned. 4 of those are part of our Indiegogo unless we go further with the funding on it. But after those 4 are funded, then the next 2 would be they're planned. So they could come out next year or as we go. It's one cool thing about it is that while it is an anthology of all different stories, we do have this like kind of through line that's like this kind of like secret story in the behind the scenes that's supposed to be kind of like a puzzle or something that you can that will be revealed in the 6th issue of like what's been going on that ties all these things together.
Hearing you mention that in that ad, man, that ad was one of the coolest like ads I've ever seen. Like it is captivating, it is gripping, and you guys chose like the right clips from each one of just to like really encompass, like, I mean, seeing you guys in the suits with just like the fucking camera in your hand and just like all bulky and everything, you just see like the entire change of your guys' history, and for you to be announcing the comics and seeing you guys being turned into comic book characters. That's just like, I mean, that's fucking like orgasmic, man. Becker, seeing him dressed up like in a suit and whatnot, like fucking amazing. That's what we want more of, to be honest. That's what we want.
Glad
to hear.
What I was curious about is, you know, Becker has been someone that's been there since the beginning for you, and you guys have been, you know, toughing it out all this time. I could imagine a lot of people have come and go. Sure. If not, maybe a few. I'm not too sure.
A lot.
Yeah, but a good chunk of it now.
Yeah.
Pretty much were like the remains.
Do you find that keeping people with you and kind of working with the same people and staying consistent, do you feel like that's a pretty difficult thing to do, especially if you have to bring someone new in to help you and hope that they stick around? And how have you gone around navigating those waters the past 20 years?
Well, just like
over and over again. What were you saying, Ben?
Oh, no, I was just saying, well, it's like, well, they're all known each other for like, you know, like 20 plus years, and people grow up and stuff, especially when you start from your, you know, early 20s and everything, and then just kind of progress from there. People get married and all that stuff. Of course, there's going to be drift off and everything. But all the new people that we're like meeting up, that's just joining us, we have like a profile now that they see. And then whenever they usually work with us, they usually have a really good time because, you know, we're not really like, you know, we're like cool dudes. And so yeah, then it was just like, oh yeah, count me in, I'm ready for another one. You know, just give me a call whenever you need it.
Family atmosphere, you know, like it's like, what's the point of doing it if it's not gonna be fun? Like, you do have things that you have to get it done, so it's gonna be kind of a stressful, hectic environment shooting, but like, it has to be fun too. So we always make sure to have like a wrap party or like anything afterwards where like, you know, wind down after a long day shooting. And I've always tried to at least include at least one new person on every project. That's been sort of like a little just thing that I've tried to do to keep things fresh and keep things going without trading like a whole team over every time. Because like there could be a tendency to be like, oh, well, you know, hire a sound guy, hire a camera guy, hire this. And it's like, well, then you don't have any of your friends there. And it's like, now it's just whatever. So it's like, if you bring in one new person at a time, acclimate, like, you know, a fish in a fish tank.
Yeah, there you go.
Nobody eats each other.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. Like building teams and whatnot is kind of, and especially in the creative world where things can really change if one person switches out, you know, things can be really, you know, thrown off for a little bit, but you kind of have to find that realignment. You kind of have to just like realize that that change is always like positive, you know, and that, you know, adjusting the company and the visions. It sounds like you've had kind of the same vision through and through the whole time, which is, I mean, fortunate as hell too, because consistency with that vision is fucking difficult. Like Apollo's been around for 4.5 years, you know? And even then it trips me out where I'm just like, damn, it's been 4.5 years. I've been trying to, I'm still trying to figure this shit out, you know? What's your learning curve been like? And how long have you were like dabbling in film before you really, you know, fully took this on?
Well, this is our 20th year of filming stuff. And it's just the learning curve technologically has been just vast. Like if you look at some of our early stuff, I feel like the energy was always there. Like I still really am fond of our early stuff and like it, but like I've only recently even put it up on our website because it felt like for the longest time it was like, I don't want this shown. It's not that it's embarrassing. It's just, it's not like what I want us to be sold as, like this shit that we made in high school. But now it feels like we've, it's such a difference from the new stuff that you can see that like, oh, that's their old stuff. And like, it's okay to like celebrate it now. Whereas like before it was kind of distant. That learning more about storytelling and like how to captivate and how to hold an audience has been tough. Like when we first started out, it was just about like what was cool. Like let's just shoot some fight scenes and do something fun. And now it feels much more like we will pay attention to what needs to be. We're more honest, right? I feel more honest as a filmmaker now of like, this is how I really feel about something, or this is how the story should be versus something cool that I want to see. Now, you always start out with that, but then it try to bring a lot of honesty to it.
That's cool. So just like maturity as like a creator is really, it's just like you can just like grow up a little bit and kind of realize the central parts of that craft. Dude, that's fucking awesome. That not a lot of creators go down that route where, I mean, it's fun to make cool shit. But something that's like meaningful and that like connects, like it sounds like even just from, I mean, blowing shit up, but it's about like your grandpa and whatnot, you know, I mean, that's, that's like a deep thing, and that's a good way to integrate stuff. But like, if you're missing that component, you know, you don't have that connection to that at that point. So that's cool. That's even just knowing that background behind it. So what else can we look forward, with you guys, like film wise in the next year? Do you guys have anything else cooking?
Yeah. So we actually just shot on this in Austin, Texas, starring Becker and Leah Sampson. She's become a good friend out here. She's an actress and comedian. So that is another short by the writer of a short we had done before, Tipsy. His name's J. Philip Wilkins. And he writes these really fun, like absurd characters and bizarre situations with like a twist.
And we could finish him in one day.
Yeah, like he writes really nice, like bite-sized shorts, like that we really nice. Like. So we've been working with him for a couple of years. He actually wrote one of the comic stories. So that was cool too. He's kind of becoming more involved with the team. And that one, Becker falls off the Congress Avenue Bridge where all the bats come. So he falls into the water and dies at the end of that one. Spoiler alert.
He dies at the end of that one. All right, go watch the film now.
it's actually the first time we're using this program where pretty much they made a CG version of me.
Oh, yeah, we did CG.
Oh, I see.
That's too cool.
We scanned a poly. And so Becker didn't actually have to swan dive off the bridge.
I feel like he'd still attempt it.
I thought about it.
He thought about it, yeah.
I found out that was a bat. That was one that had all the bats in it. When it turns to dust, a bunch of bats like fly out of it at night and everything. Don't want to be paralyzed in the water and stuff like that. They've just been eating my bats. I get COVID again.
That's awesome.
We also have just a backlog of scripts that we're kind of trying to work our way through and get through. We have a Western that we're really interested in shooting that actually is in the first issue of the comic too. So that is our first comic to film.
Yeah. Oh, cool.
Filmed a comic. This one we had a script. We haven't shot it yet, but we were like, it's good enough to be a comic too first.
Nice.
So working backwards, what is it?
Isn't that the one with the colorist is like did some like big work too?
Yeah. So like she actually just colored the cover of the new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2 Secret of the Ooze vinyl re-release soundtrack.
That's cool.
Nice.
It's drawn by the fucking creator of Ninja Turtles. She colored it. So she's been doing some Batman and some Ninja Turtles work. Very, very lucky to be working with her.
That's a very, very cool fact.
Yeah.
Dude, how cool. That's super interesting. That's
awesome. I just saw that today that they're doing a limited edition re-release of the soundtrack for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Part 2, The Secret of the Ooze, and she colored the cover. So,
I love Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, The Secret of the Ooze.
You would love that movie.
Yeah, you would.
I do love that movie.
I mean, it's a horrible film, but I still love it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it does have Vanilla Ice in it, though.
And Ernie Reyes Jr. underutilized. Underutilized guy.
That's a commentary film we just have not gotten to yet.
We
did the first one, and then I was like, damn, guys, this was rough.
You haven't done a commentary for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2 The Secret of the Ooze yet?
Not yet. Oh, man. Yeah, maybe we'll get you guys for that. Like, that'll be
See, the secret that no one has realized is there's never been actually a good Ninja Turtles movie. Maybe the CG one that came out in like 2008. But
I think you're right. Your first statement. I don't think anybody.
I said maybe that's like the only good one.
I think the coolest thing about the Ninja Turtles is the action figures, in my opinion. Because my kids watch the real cartoon, the original one. Let them have fun. I don't let them watch anything new. But rewatching that with them, I'm like, maybe it's just an arcade game and a action figure series.
Yeah, the arcade game is fun. I won't lie. Yeah, it is.
Speaking of,
I always like those the series of figures where they listen to hip hop. And then I had Donatello looking like Run DMC with a clock, and then another person had a clock on them.
Oh yeah.
Those are great too. I totally forgot that was a thing.
Oh man, there's so many of them.
That's David Crosby.
David Crosby? Ninja Turtle what?
No, David Crosby.
Speaking of action figures, you guys actually made some, right? Because I know Becker is an action figure. I saw that one.
Mm-hmm. Custom.
He got a custom of the gorilla.
That's the first conversation I had with him when we sat down. He was like, hey, look at me. I'm in a gorilla suit and I rip a penis off. No, like, filter or nothing. He was just like, you want to see this? And of course,
I still do that.
Yeah.
I still do that. I always told our new captain, during an interview. Oh, you know, I do things like this.
That's I just like it's icebreaker. And I'm all like, oh, sick, dude. I'm all, yeah, I'll watch it. But, you know, going into like, now they're going deeper into comics and that potentially could be an ongoing thing. And you said you like, you know, making stuff and making toys. Right. Do you see that totally being an option down the line with all of your original ideas?
Absolutely. I would love to. So we've done a couple of custom things for our film Night Dicks Miami, starring Becker. Mm-hmm. Me and my wife, Kirsten, made some action figures for a segment. So we did shot like a little 80s or 90s commercial for these Night Dicks action figures using our kids. And just seeing those little like things come to life, it's just like, God, I wish we could actually make these.
Mm-hmm.
But Night Dicks is kind of like our most, I guess, franchisable, like that's the one I want to do stuff with. So they're throughout the comic issues, they're involved in that story that is going on behind the scenes. That's kind of like the crux of that. And then what I would really like to make figures seems like such a long shot. I don't know how the hell we could ever do that. But a board game is kind of in the works in my head of what I want to do with Night Dicks. And also I have a novel half written. So it's a choose your own adventure novel where it's
like nice.
And it's hopefully out this year, but more likely next year with all my times with the comic right now. But Night Dicks is like, put all our effort into that.
That's awesome. That's like one of my top ones too. It's just so much fun.
Yeah, that board game community goes hardcore, man. Like those Kickstarters get fucking funded. If I ever seen it,
yeah,
it's just like by the time you check on it, it's like $8,000 out of $3,000 made, and it's just like what the fuck.
It's just Night Dicks just seems like the one to, you know, that's where we're basing a lot of the stuff on. Or like there's Becker as it's Rochester, Blade. And then Dr. Bitch is Sasha Boggs. So she's our producer. She's helping me with producing the comic, like putting everything together. And that's the Night Ducks of when the Night Dicks turn into ducks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice.
So that's kind of our creative team at the moment. It's me, Sasha, Beck, and Ray. And that's who's creating this stuff. And
it's only a matter of time before you get the Night Dicks mobile.
Oh man.
$1 and donuts van for sale. Buy all the action figures and they all fit in there.
Oh, I just love it, man. Like remember when Kevin Smith did Blunt Man and Chronic?
Yeah.
As like a joke.
Yeah.
And then they became like, you know, they were selling them at Sam Goody.
Yeah.
There and you got go. Mark Hamill being the cock knocker.
Yeah. Some of the best.
That's the trajectory.
That's been really cool. That's been really cool for the guy.
Yeah. Fuck yeah. Yeah. That's like
I saw the alligator chompers. Which is, but doesn't even have a story yet. But like, you know, he's definitely part of the lore. That's the cool thing. That's the cool thing about everything about this is that when you're like the lore master, you can literally just do whatever you want.
Oh yeah,
and you can just do some. Yeah. And then you just do some fake science thing.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
You know, it doesn't matter because it's supposed to be like that.
Yeah, and Night Dicks is one of the ones that's most free. So that's one that me and Beck like kind of co-created because we had a short where we needed just some detective characters, and Becker came in as like they were just written generically, and he threw a whole spin on it. We're doing like this 40s detective thing, and then working with Brandon, where like just pairing the two of them up was really funny. And so Becker was like, "Why don't we like call them the Night Dicks and fucking do a whole spinoff?" And I was like, "I don't want to shoot a whole other fucking thing," but then it sounded funny, and so we did it and made it as stupid and as absurd as possible while still kind of trying to hold on to a little bit of heart. And they're just the most fun characters to write and create for because there's no real rules. Like you can really do anything with it. And just always trying to restrain it into being like, there's got to be some sort of grounded heart to it. Like these characters care about each other. And that's kind of it. Everything else is fair game to be absurd or crazy or multiverse garbage and stupid universe shit happening. Like you can do anything you want.
The original concept of Night Dicks is that it was a cop show, but it's just been going on for so long that they literally done every single kind of case. And so that's why it's always just like, oh, shit, we got a genie and a magic lamp again.
Again.
Yeah, I love that.
That was like our internal logic for writing it. Like, you know, he's always trying to write like a little backstory that no one else will see, just to hopefully that'll like kind of translate onto screen a little bit. And that was it. It was that these night takes that we're showing it was a straightforward cop show, but it's been running for like 30 years and they're out of ideas. And so they're just like, it's just trash TV now.
Right? That's amazing.
They'll take on any case.
Yeah.
That's right.
Dude, that's awesome. That's there's so much packed into it. And it's like you said, it's one of those anthologies that there's a little bit for everybody, from Westerns to like this detective stuff. And there's just, it's interesting how diverse it is. Cause like ours, what you're saying, it's a bit more niche and it's kind of focused, but I love getting an anthology that kind of just opens you up different things. Cause you're kind of introducing audiences to different genres they might've not even dipped their toes in before. And now they're taking a shot at it.
I love the idea of your guys' too. I'm really excited to see it too, just because for one, just the art I've seen so far looks so cool. But just I love that idea of like a theme. Like you've got a theme, and like I have no idea what stories you guys are doing, but like just the idea that it all will tie back into
The theme. That was it was just like a marketing thing. Really, like, and I mean, I'll tell everyone the secret. Like, it's just, I have a cosmic punk rock love story coming out called Teenage Babylon. And before I did that, my publisher was just like, hey, why don't you try putting out a punk rock themed anthology to build the base around that? And that way, when you launch your book right after that, you kind of already have that base within that same like niche of the genre of your book, you know, thematically.
Is there your story, is that in the anthology too? Or is it totally separate?
It's kind of like a weird, like it is in the same universe. It's the main character actually, but it actually has nothing to do with the main story, but it's just kind of a development for him. It's like a one shot just for that character. It even has a different artist and all this stuff. So it's kind of exciting seeing the switch over once Teenage Babylon does come out. It's been a wild kind of journey, but it's a lot of people are using this as a launching point to be like, this is a base, like a preview of my story, and we're going to do something bigger after this. So it's been kind of cool getting all these creators together and networking them.
It's also one of those things that, like, you know, you didn't realize how many people would be into it until the submissions came in. Oh, God, I think of like that first month of like, it was like over 80 stories.
Yeah. And we had over 80 submissions at the end, and that was kind of wild.
Yeah, it was a lot of people within the same realm of like a punk rock story. Like they were all different, but all fell into that theme.
Comics have like always kind of gone hand in hand. Like it feels like such a good like match.
That DIY. You know?
And
it's kind of like, fuck it, I don't need anybody. I'm just going to do it myself.
Yeah.
It's cool. Music and comics are a big thing. And we'll actually be announcing something very soon that's in development regarding music and comics that'll be happening this summer. Nice. So I'm really hyped to talk about it. But we have 7 days left under Kickstarter as this episode airs. It's on a Kickstarter. It's on your Indiegogo, on your crowdfunding. Yeah. There's a link below for it to check out. Anything else you guys want to mention before about like tiers or anything else that about the crowdfunding that you want to mention?
Yeah. I mean, we've got some cool tiers, I think. We've got the issues themselves. We've got the hardcover version that'll collect them all at the end. You can get drawn into it. There's a $50 tier to be a cameo, and then a $500 tier for a full page story about you. Like you would join the Night Dicks on a mission, or you like amazing. Whatever character you want to be with. But like that seems to be like that would be the popular one. But or if you want me to draw you like I draw myself, then that's $100. There's a couple cool things.
I love that you had that ready. You're like, so this, by the way.
This is what I've been looking. I have to look at my face at all times of day, or else, you know, my narcissism doesn't get checked.
There you go. Well, guys.
Yeah, I know. There's a lot of good tiers because I backed it already. And like, there's a lot of like really awesome ones, like you said. And there's still affordable ones that are like consumer friendly as well.
That's the cool thing. That diversity behind
some,
your
like,
crowdfunding.
Outrageous ones, just in case somebody would want to do something cool like that. And also, like, you know, I didn't want to draw a whole comic for less than that. Like, this seemed like a lot.
Yeah,
but you definitely want like people to be able to get in it. So like 50 seemed like a good number to be like, if you want to be in a comic book, that's not that bad. It's like,
That's awesome, dude. I love when creators do stuff like that because it's just exciting. It's and it makes it more personal for that person. receiving it and just being put into book. It's always like a dream come true, you know? And if, especially if you're gifting that to someone, it's a fucking badass gift. Oh, yeah. So if you guys are looking for something.
Great call.
Yeah. Yeah. Gift that. All,
wait, great idea.
Gift that to someone, you know? Like, and then, dude, if someone gave me a comic with me in it, I'm fucking, who cares where it's from? Like, I'm fucking hyped. But I mean, if it's from you guys and the quality of the art in all these stories, is
you
like
fishing for a gift for
top tiers. Maybe, yeah. I'm trying to throw a hook over there. Cool, someone back their Kickstarter and toss me in it. I'm fucking sick, I'm not gonna lie. But it's one of those things, like, I don't know where I was going after that. Totally distracted me. I got really excited with me in a comic book. Oh, your artists, the artists you have in it are so top tier. I was just looking through the preview pages, and dude, some of that stuff is just beyond gorgeous. Mm-hmm. I think
There's a couple of guys that we've been working with for a long time, just through, like, so that's another thing we've done is every time we make a short film, all these are we'll get character art done for that film, just because I always wanted, that's kind of inspired by action figures too. It was just like that, where they would have that key art of like on the back, here's Raphael and he's doing the pose that you know that he does. So I wanted that for every character that ever appears in one of our films, just in case we want to make a t-shirt or a thing, like we need something. So that doesn't have all been drawn by Diego Toro, and he's been great over the years to always be updating that. And we sell a poster with all of them all together and stuff.
It's really awe-inspiring to see just like all the characters by the same guy.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Consistency, you know.
Yeah.
In the background of the poster and stuff, one of our pals, Jared Coons, who's a giant mountain of a man kind of dude, but he's just like we kind of drew him to scale where he's just like kind of like pretty much the horizon. And then just this giant guy on drums in the background. And then he just was like, who the fuck is that guy?
That's amazing.
But I just got a another page back from an artist today that has Jared Coons on it. So this is
Oh,
that's amazing. That's awesome.
Yeah, who was that? You got hit with a can?
Yeah. Face with a can and not responding at all. So.
That's amazing.
That's an issue too. So still getting art from around the world. That was colored in Kazakhstan today.
Bringing the world together. Yeah. Dolls and
That's a real place.
Bringing the world together.
That's a real place.
And how many pages is the anthology in total?
So each one is looking to be about 48. They were starting like around 40, but then we just kept adding stuff. And now our latest edition that we did was we're doing a pull out centerfold pinup in the middle of each one.
Nice.
Our friend Kayla, she's on YouTube. Have this ready for a reason. She does these vintage style pinups with a photographer friend of hers, and so they're allowing us to reprint them and kind of use them as like a centerfold.
Nice, dude. That's sick. Nice. That's some fucking quality Deeds comics.
Dolls. I'm really bad at pitching everybody's name. Yeah. Kayla Emerson and Deeds Dolls is what.
Good old smut. Give people what they want. Good. Hot dames, low prices, man. Dolls and donuts. This year was a special year. This last premiere we had was the first time we had titties in the Dolls and Donuts film.
That was our first nude. Yeah,
it's our first nude right there.
I love that.
And it was like, cool. All right.
Made it.
We did it.
That's how you know you've made it.
Yeah.
You finally got
to see a boob, man. You know?
Becker was like, it took 20 years.
20 years
man.
That is amazing. Well, we have a week left on your Kickstarter. I'll drop your guys' link down below. Indiegogo. I don't know. It's just in my vocabulary.
It's like, hey, pass me a Kleenex.
It's like
a tissue or something, you know. We have a week left, and I'm super excited to check out this book because it just sounds like ultimate comics 100%. And it sounds like you guys have a lot of things building up within it to keep people's attention and to keep them supporting so you could keep on making these comics. And we would want nothing more than to see this hit issue 6 and go beyond that, because it sounds like a dream come true, that dream 20 years in the making, and you're putting out a fucking book. Shows you how fucking hard it is to make comics sometimes. But it happens, you know? So I'm so proud of you guys. I'm so hyped to see this. And thank you so much for your time. And
thank you guys. It was great.
Yeah.
You and looking forward to your book as well.
Thank you. Thanks for hanging.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's been a gas.
Yeah.